Welcome to All Power to the Developing, a podcast of the Eastside Institute, where social justice, human development, and community building come together. This is where you will meet activists, artists, teachers, scholars, helpers, and healers who are bringing creativity, hope, and possibility to individuals and communities all over the world. This episode of All Power to the Developing. This is your host, Desiree Wanden, Des for short. Today I have a very, very special guest with me. Today's relationship between humanity and the ecosystem is marked by significant challenges, including climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution, underscoring the urgent need for sustainable practices. There is, however, growing global awareness and shift. Our guest today represents that shift. Dr. Jamie McCray is an ecologist and choreographer whose work explores questions of place to three forms of inquiry: research, movement, and community engagement. Dr. Jamie McCray, welcome to All Power to the Developing.
Thanks so much for having me, Des.
And how are you doing?
Today is a beautiful, sunshiny day. I'm feeling energized and happy to be here.
Yes, yes. For those that do not know, Dr. Jamie McCray was one of the presenters at the last Performing the World happenings, and we're very excited to have her on All Power to Developing. So where does your love of nature and dance, I thought that was very interesting that you kind of intersect our ecosystem with dance. Where does that begin for you? Where does your love of nature, if it is a love, travel back for you?
Yeah, it is most definitely a love. And I think I was born into the world with it. So I can remember back growing up in Brooklyn. I know folks don't think of that as a place that's filled with nature, but it is. So growing up, and there are ants hanging out on my block, they're little caterpillars, and these were my friends. And I was super, super protective of them. So, you know, we had the other little boys on the block that would always try and mess with my small creatures, but really not on my watch. And so I have been communing with and defending, you know, the other than human for pretty much my entire life. And my curiosity about the other than human has really always been here. And I got to explore that through ecology, through science, and it's really just been a complete through line. Running in parallel to that has also been my love of dance and movement. And I think that also comes from nature, right? You've got the tree branches that and leaves that dance in the wind. If you see water moving across rocks or the rhythm of the waves in the ocean, all of that is movement, and I've always reflected that. So my parents would always have me in like science stuff after school programs, but also in dance because, you know, I just had to move, and they were very wonderful about helping me explore the things that I loved and connected with.
Did you have dance inspirations at that age? Was there anyone you were kind of seeing maybe in the mainstream or on television or magazines that inspired you? Where did your love for dance come from?
I really think my love of dance came from just a love of movement in general. When I was growing up, I really adored, you know, old musicals, Singing in the Rain, Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly were huge for me. I watched a lot, probably every single movie that they were in. Even the bad ones like Xanadu, not great, but, you know, good dance sequences. You know, folks like Gregory Hines and the Nicholas Brothers, I've always loved like Broadway musicals. So I remember one of the early ones I saw, Jelly's Last Jam. Really amazing tap, right? So it's part of the blessing of growing up in New York City is having access to a lot of that musical theater and culture and performance. So being able to go to that $20 if you are able to get up early and go for those first tickets. Well, back in the day, their ticket prices are a little different these days.
Yes, much more expensive. Earlier you said that you were coming from Brooklyn, New York, and maybe there's the assumption because this is a city that there isn't much nature, but you said that there's nature all around us. Could you speak to that? Can you speak to maybe we have a certain idea of what nature is, like just this vast forest or this mountainous range, and we see this, and this is what the world shows us as nature, but you say nature is all around us. Can you speak a little bit about that and
Absolutely. Yeah, so the concept that nature is a place that you have to go to and that human beings are separate from nature is a very, I think, Western view of how we exist on the planet. In a lot of non-Western cultures, human beings are a part of the systems around us, right? And nature is, therefore, nature is everywhere. You can't be somewhere else. Now, there is the built environment, right? And so those are concrete buildings, asphalt, they're things that humans have constructed. And we think of that for some reason as outside of nature, which is very odd because you wouldn't think of like a bird's nest as being outside of nature, right? But that is something that a bird went and built, right? It constructed this housing, and we do the same thing. So when I say that nature is always all around us, you just have to take a look. There are lots of living things, even in the heart of the city. There are the trees growing on the sidewalk. There are, the dandelions that are sprouting from small cracks. There's that other than human all around us all the time. And if we pay attention to it and access it, we can start to build those relationships and see how we are connected.
One of your missions is helping people foster a relationship with the planet. Now, relationships in general are very challenging, whether they're romantic, platonic, friendships. Relationships can be very challenging, but now this is fostering a relationship with the planet, which you said is alive all around us. Could you speak a little bit about what that means to you and how does one start to foster a relationship with the planet? If maybe they're not too familiar with building a relationship with nature.
Sure. I think that pretty much everyone is familiar with how you build a relationship in general, right? So one of the things that you start with is you start spending time together, right? So you can start spending time wherever you are. So this is taking a walk in your neighborhood. Then you want to notice what's going on with the other person? What's going on with your space, right? Are there particular trees? Are there particular animals that are living and sharing in the spaces that you're existing in? I also love libraries. Totally, I will nerd out on any and everything. And so you can find field guides and books, or maybe there is someone that is in your neighborhood that does something like a foraging walk, which, you know, you go out and you walk with them around your space, and they can point out all the edible plants that are around that you wouldn't have noticed.
That's nice, yeah.
Right. So, you know, you can, it's that spending time learning about what's around you. And that's a great way and pretty easy to start to build that relationship. And as a baseline, that's all you have to do. You can check out your surroundings. How do they change throughout the year? You know, what is the rhythm of the place where you live? It's different. Winter, spring, summer, fall, you know, what are the changes that you notice? And really, nothing is too small. Nothing is too small to notice. You know, if we're going to continue with the analogy of a relationship, you know, when maybe somebody has a particular thing they do with their hand, and when they do that, they're nervous. And so you see it and you're like, oh, okay, I know they're nervous in this instance. Perhaps there is a particular flower that comes up, like a crocus, every year by a particular spot in by a particular tree, and you go, oh, every time this comes up, I know that it's gonna, spring is near. You know, we're finally gonna to move out. So it's just getting to know the place that is around you, and once you start understanding or being used to those rhythms, I think that's a great base for a nice, healthy, juicy relationship.
Yeah, when you're saying of, it reminds me of a bit of like indigenous civilizations. I feel like they really watched nature and based a lot of some of their principles, some of their teachings, even some of their architecture off of just animals that they viewed. So when you're speaking of kind of witnessing nature and allowing information from nature to influence you, that's kind of something that I envision a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like right now what we have is, because there is so much, we exist so much in our built environment. We exist so much where we have light inputs, right, that, you know, allow us to stay up all, you can binge Netflix all night.
Yep.
Right, and so it takes your concentration off of the rhythms of the other living things that are going on around you, right, and it focuses them on these things that humans have built. And indigenous groups, be they, you know, Native Americans, be they, you know, our ancestors from whichever African country you might be from, you know, they existed in a time where, I guess, the rhythms in society was more connected. And as they moved into the modern times, there are certain cultures that still haven't lost that knowledge. Now, I'm a Black American, and I would say that the, like, American culture is disconnected from those rhythms. So, you know, I have to take some of those patterns and learnings from watching other cultures that are still more in tune. So, for example, like the time that I worked in the Peace Corps for 2 years in Samoa, and you know, getting that perspective and cultural view of how to exist in the world, getting a Afro-Indigenous culture in view, you know, growing up, like my parents sent me to for a school called Little Sun People. So, you know, it was very Pan-Africanist, you know, we are Black American and we've been disconnected, but hey, these are ways in which we can connect and learn from the rhythms and the deep knowledge that our ancestors have had, and we can, you know, continue to bring those things forward.
You alluded to something a little earlier about now that we have a lot more technology, staying up late with the cell phones, the pads, gaming for those that are into that. It seems that there's a lot more technology that is being traded in for the outdoor experience now, right? Even VR now mm-hmm. is getting very popular, right? Why go to the park when you could go to the park in VR, right? It's like a little bit of a sentiment that's coming up. How do you feel like that really affects people's relationship with nature? Do you think that, what is your viewpoint on that? Do you feel people will eventually become totally disconnected? Or do you feel that this is just a natural progression and we're still in a good place with nature, but I'm not kind of liking where this is going?
Well, I think the technology is a tool, right? And so that it can be used in a way that is extremely helpful, or it can be used in a way that is detrimental to us. But it in and of itself is reasonably neutral. I feel like what we are also seeing in this time is a really beautiful movement of folks very intentionally saying, I want to connect with nature.
Yes, yes.
Right. So you've got groups like Outdoor Afro, Black Girl Environmentalist, Black Girls Hike 2, Melanin Base Camp. Like, so there are all of these folks that are going, technology is wonderful and beautiful and it can help. And I also need these other things. I need to be able to look out on blue waters. I need to be able to, you know, look at trees blow in the wind. I need to be able to smell the rain fall, right? And so there are things that you can't get just in a isolated room. There are those, you're accessing more of your senses when you are able to be out in a particular environment. And so I think that, you know, for us to actually be healthy as people, we're needing to engage all of those senses. And I feel like we're realizing that. And so there are a lot of folks that are very intentionally going outside.
Yeah. You have to go outside. I was kind of like a little bit of a message to myself too. I used to live at the park. And then now yeah. I'm kind of, as you get older, you kind of, stay inside a little bit more. How has that been for you? Has your personal journey by technology muddied your relationship with nature as an ecologist? Has technology affected you in any of that way?
Well, yeah, modern America. So for most of my day job currently, I'm an administrator. I work for the National Wildlife Federation, and I'm a managing director of a coalition that takes a lot of online Zoom time, environmental education centers over three states, and talking to people in that way. And so it's very different from, my time as a field biologist, being able to be out in the panhandle in Florida on a sea turtle nesting beach, literally all night, walking up and down, looking for turtles to come up and nest, that rush of excitement that you get when you actually see one. And then you're like, all right, we gotta, get out the tape measure, get out the calipers, we're gonna tag them, we're gonna do all of this. And I'm a little more removed from that now, but there is a really beautiful river that's by me. I'm able to go down, take a walk. I wouldn't say every day, but probably a good 4 or so times a week. I get to walk and say hi to the mallard couple and their cute little ducklings and whatnot. And so I do try to continue to keep that relationship up. Just like how do I get outside? Also, for the last 2 years, I've been gardening, and so my garden has expanded, and so that also keeps me connected and watching the growing things and trying to keep ahead of. I grew some brassicas, which are things like cabbages and and Brussels sprouts, right? And so those are things that attract slugs. And if you're not on top of things,
Yeah,
if you're not watching,
that's a
you're
whole
not
nother
seeing what's
world.
going on, right? Then you're growing. I was trying to grow for me and like not share everything with the slugs, And so I have found ways to continue to have relationships and find myself outside and be with other growing things. So it's, I try and find a balance, but
Yeah,
it's harder.
that's the tough part, the balance, like trying to get in the middle of both, like not all too much on the screen time, but not, getting a tent and just living out there in the park, something like that. Just kind of finding the middle of that. We're gonna take a short commercial break, and like Dr. Jamie McRae said, he has tons of initiatives, and this is definitely a person that has boots on the ground. So when we come back from the commercial break, we're gonna be speaking more about some of the initiatives she's a part of, and we're gonna get deeper and deeper into her work. All power to the developing. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Hi, I'm Melissa Meyer, Associate Director of the Eastside Institute. Welcome to All Power to the Developing. I hope you're enjoying today's conversation. In each episode, we introduce you to some amazing performance activists, play revolutionaries, and developmentalists from around the world who talk to us about their creative grassroots efforts to build a better world. If you like what you hear, please follow and share the series. You can find us on Amazon, Spotify, and Podbean. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas. Like everything at the Institute, the growth of All Power to the Developing depends upon the people who create it and benefit from it. We hope you're one of them. Thanks for your support, and now back to our conversation.
We are back from commercial break. We are back with Dr. Jamie McRae. Jamie, you founded the Ecotonic Movement in 2020. This is an initiative that you founded. Could you talk to us about this initiative and what inspired you to create it?
Sure. Ecotonic Movement is really the expression of my work that combines science with dance. So an ecotone is the space where two ecosystems meet, right? And in that area, you are going to find additional diversity. You're going to find plants and animals that don't exist in either of those separate ecosystems. So it's just this wonderful, rich space. And I feel like that was something that really reflected what I'm trying to do. The ideas and creativity that springs up when you are putting together science and dance, you get things happening that you don't really see if you're only in the dance space or if you're only in the science space. So I wanted to pursue, I wanted to pursue those places and see who wanted to partner and make those things happen.
So you said you get to see things that you don't ordinarily see out of, I guess, the individual communities now they're intersected. Could you give us a little preview? What are some things that people see, or what are some things that maybe have emerged out of that intersection for you?
Sure. So I think in this space, one of the great things is you get to see the emotion connect with the intellectual, right? So, when we think about the impacts of climate change, right, they're pretty hard. We're seeing in a lot of flooding in places, and you know, sometimes that's like impacting actual lives, right? We're seeing droughts in other places. You know, maybe we're seeing additional crop pest pressures. So, you know, farmers are going through it. And so there are all of these feelings that are really hard to put into words, right? And how do you process those? You can process them in a place of movement, in a place of dance, right? And so if you're in a ecotonic movement workshop, you're like, one, you get to process those feelings, but you also are getting to understand why are these things happening? Right. And understanding the scientific background of that. And then you can move into this space of, well, where do we want to go in the future? Right. What does that future, now that I know this is why things are happening and how they're happening, what do I want things to look like in the future? What do I want the future to feel like, to smell like? And so you get to access all of these different pieces of yourself and the knowledge that you hold that you might not if you were just in a scientific lecture, or that if the dance wasn't about the science, it would, you know, it wouldn't touch on the same topics. So I would say that's an example of, you know, the generative space that I like to work in.
And are the people involved, do they have a dance background? Are they people that may have never danced before and may never physically, you know, been in a space to physically express themselves? Or is it limited to those with dance experience?
So yes, and who I work with is really broad. The reason that I work with people is I'm trying to create these relationships, this process. We want to explore what's going on in our natural world from a scientific perspective and from a movement perspective. So I have gone in and done actual classroom lessons and lectures that have, these are the standards that we're teaching. So, and we're hitting those. So that's in a classroom setting. There are community workshops where we have intergenerational participants who they don't necessarily have a dance background. You know, they're curious, interested, they're at the community center, let's do it, let's go. But there are, and then there are performances that I get to create. And in those performances, I'll be working with dancers, right? And so they have a dance background, and we're working in a more refined choreographic space. So it really gets to span a very wide wide range. I would also like to say, it's so fun when you get a diverse group of people together. So when you have scientists in the room who are bringing that the knowledge of their research, when you have farmers in the room who are bringing knowledge of that land that they're coming from, you have, you know, your elders, when you have kids, and all of us have different experiences and knowledge to bring. And I get to be that that facilitator, that connector that helps folks talk to each other. So so I'm thinking about this one workshop that we did with the University of Idaho. And one of the participants, one of our knowledge keepers, was a bean farmer. And this is in the middle of the pandemic, so we're on Zoom. And we just, you know, it starts out, they're leaning back, they've got their arms crossed, and it's like, all right, I don't know about this dance stuff, but I can be here and I can tell you about my, you know, my beans and how they're growing and whatnot. And just as the workshop progressed, you know, we're asking questions about your growing practices, what do you see? And we're turning the responses into movement. So the thing that you've just said is now reflected back at you. And then we're asking everyone to do those movements with us. And, you know, it's really hard to be detached from your own experiences and words. So you want to now participate. And so by the end,
yep,
Farmer was also dancing with everyone, right? And so dancing in a movement gestural sense, like we did not have the farmer, you know, do a triple pirouette.
Yeah,
There are different movement levels that you can access, but it's really a great way to share your knowledge and to, you know, build and develop relationships as you build and develop dances.
Yeah. Something interesting that made me think of is you said dance and movement. Like when I think of dance, I automatically attach it to music. But when I think of movement, when I think of movement, it doesn't necessarily have to be the music, right? And you spoke about how nature could be like the soundtrack. Watching some of the footage from some of your water walks, it seems like the nature is the soundtrack for your walks, as opposed to, you know, turning on the iPod and we're going to jam onto this song in the park. The nature represents the soundtrack. So that was very amazing just thinking about that. And the farmers identifying with the movement, because the movement represented their words, their emotions.
Yeah.
When I watched your presentation that you gave at PTW, you had something that said, "Why dance?" And there were bullet points behind it. Synthesize information in the mind and body. Connect with the human and the non-human. Express feelings that are hard to put into words. Access a space of creativity, helping us to articulate a vision of a thriving future. And all I thought people were doing was just dancing, you know, like people think we're just dancing and this is music and we like this music and we move to the left and we move to the right. But this to me really encapsulated some of the things we don't see in dance that we get from the dance. Could you speak to these bullet points that you did? These are amazing, by the way.
Sure. So I feel like, well, one, you're a dancer. So I feel like you do know a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Is that there is dance that is for movement's sake, and it is just about the movement. And there is also dance that is narrative, right? That tells a story, that communicates about a particular thing. And what I love is narrative dance. And so One, the synthesizing information in the mind and body. Our bodies are really intelligent, and they hold information within us. So if you are learning about how water molecules move, and as they get extra heat, they move more, they expand, and that water expansion, because of that heat energy coming in, is how we're getting sea level rise, right? If you're literally in a group and you are moving together with more and more energy as you're bumping into people, you actually expand. It just happens. And so that is a way to physically understand that concept of how sea level rise happens, right? And so you now not only know the intellectual part of it, you've experienced it, and you are going to hold that information differently because it's literally physically in your bones, right? So that's one tool that dance can help us with. Connecting with the human and non-human, right? When you are trying to physically take in something that is not human and putting its movements or its patterns into your body, that's another you're learning through your muscle memory these other things, and you'll have intellectual epiphanies, it's like, oh. and so just being in a space where you're able to do that, I think is really, really important. It gives you the chance to, as I say, walk a mile in someone else's shoes, or, crawl a mile in a body that has no legs. I think it's a beautiful way to connect. We talked a little bit about expressing feelings that are hard to put into words before, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, but there is real climate grief that people are experiencing as they're seeing how climate change is impacting us, and perhaps feeling some of the powerlessness or the seeming powerlessness that we have when we're thinking about how can we change these large systems? How do you put that into words?
Yeah.
It can be so difficult, but you could put it into sound, you can put it into music, and that can be a way to express and share that, so you can process it, you can acknowledge it, and you don't stop there, because that's unhelpful, right? You want it to use that processing to move through it. And moving through is to that fourth bullet, where you're accessing that space of creativity to help articulate a vision of a thriving future. Because if we don't know what that future looks like, if we don't know what the future that we want looks like, how are we ever going to know how to get there?
Yeah.
Right? And so using that imaginative, creative, playful space to come up with, what do you want to be doing in the future? What do you want your great great grandchildren to be able to experience, and to help us collectively come up with different futures with an S, right? Because it's not all going to look like the same thing. I really think dance and the arts in general are a really great way to manifest that. So once we have the vision, we can work on the steps, the very practical, policy oriented, social, scientific steps that are going to be able to help get us there.
Absolutely. these four bullet points are amazing. I hope people write them down and start exploring them themselves. Thank you for sharing that. As we start wrapping up, there are some things that you are working towards that are coming up, and some future plans. Speaking of future fields, but you got future plans.
Oh yeah, a
lot of future plans. Can we speak about some of these things that that people might have to look forward to in the near future, and then also speak about some of the initiatives that you're thinking of for the long term?
Sure. So, I mean, as I move forward, I definitely am interested in creating as much of this ecotonic movement, science, art in the world. So if this is resonating with folks, ecotonicmovement.org, contact me. I'd love to connect and birth more of these wonderful projects in the world. Some of my specific initiatives that are coming up, I'm working with the Dance Exchange this summer on a climate institute. And so we're going to be inviting dancers, we're going to be inviting scientists, we're going to be inviting interested individuals to come hang out with us for 4 days in July, I believe. And, you know, we want to explore climate change. What is our role in it? What is our role in creating the futures that we want to see with a really great, diverse group of folks. So I'm very excited for that to happen. And I'm really excited to try and connect with, try and connect with some men, fellas. I feel like often in some of the dance and environmental spaces, it's, you know, it's women heavy, and I really value diversity in all its forms. So diversity of thought, diversity of life experience, you know, gender, all that. So, you know, there's gonna be a targeted focus to find some more guys to to come and join in the fun.
Get out there.
I'm looking at you, Dez.
Yep. Me and everyone else, we got to get up and get out there in July.
Yeah. So another project that I'm working on birthing into the world is an initiative called Forever Wild Heirs. And I'm working on this with my mother. And it is a retreat space, a science dance institute, if you will, that is located in the Catskills on a 28 acre farm. And we are really, really excited about getting that off the ground, you know, being able to host residencies, being able to host workshops, being able to host leadership retreats for other folks that are really thinking about building these beautiful, thriving future worlds. And, you know, we want to create a place that allows folks to do that. And the name Forever Wild Heirs is a tribute to my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, Dolly Robinson. And she was a delegate for New York City at the Constitutional Convention back in the 50s, and she spoke in favor of keeping the Adirondacks forever wild. It's a legal designation that offers protection. It's the highest form of protection that you can have for land. And she wanted to keep this place forever wild for her children and great-grandchildren, who she hoped would have the time to be able to go out and hear the call of the loon, right? To experience some of these wilder places, right? Because she also lived primarily in New York. And so we also want to honor that, because sometimes you do need to take out time and go away to be able to think and connect and birth some of these, you know, grander thoughts and visions, and take that knowledge that you found back into your more daily life. And so we've named the soon to come organization Forever Wild Heirs. So we're currently working on, you know, getting the 501c3 and et cetera up and running. But if you are interested in, you know, hosting leadership retreats and all of that now, you know, we are able to do that.
Nice. Some amazing work, Dr. Jamie McCray. Definitely would like to thank you for being on All Power to the Developing. Before we part, when we decided to launch this podcast, it was with the hopes of exposing the world to people that are working to help others develop. And you're certainly helping others to develop, foster their relationship with the planet. When you hear the phrase, all power to the developing, what does that mean to you?
When I hear all power to the developing, it puts me in mind of practice, right? Of being on a journey and trying new things, learning, just a beautiful forward momentum. And I really love the space that you've created here. There are so many ways in which we can develop, and you know, you can't do everything at once, but being able to pick what's that thing that you want to work on now, what is the thing that you want to further, and being able to spend time and developing as something that is happening, not a space of all power to the developed, like we're done. But you know, that growing, I really love it.
Yeah, keep the ball rolling, just like you're always keeping the ball rolling. And we would like to tell people, if they would like to support All Power to Developing, we are available on most all digital streaming platforms. You could also write to us at podcast@eastsideinstitute.org and let us know what you love about the episode. I'm sure many people are going to love this episode, so write to us. Let us know what you loved, and we would love to read your response at the end of the episode. We are going to put Dr. Jamie McCray's information in the description, and if you would like to keep in touch with her and all the initiatives she has to offer, it will gladly be there for you. Once again, this is Desiree Wanden, Dr. Jamie McCray. All power to the developing, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Des.
All Power to the Developing was made possible in part by Growing Social Therapeutics, the Baylor Wolf Fund.